for the very first time in March, not the first time in general, we take a trip south-southeast. That's Florida, for those with not quite the built-in compass that my brain possesses. And we pay a virtual visit to our resident presidentologist. That's a new word I made up, of course. Historian, current events guru, professor, blogger, and all-around interesting dude. It's Dr. Ron Fineman discussing the latest shenanigans from the White House and other events affecting the great planet Earth that we call home. Let's see if I have properly patched in the cables, pressed the right buttons, and crossed my fingers enough times. Ron, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. Yes, I'm here.
Well, glad to hear that. Anyway, Ron, your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, you write one pretty much every day, as we discussed previously. You really only take, you only took out a time out when you had that hurricane back last
hurricane
year.
Hurricane Irma, yes, in September.
You write every single day, even on your birthday. So, important
yes,
topics
<I do.
laughs> to ponder, political discussions, thoughts, ramblings, rumblings, tumblings and mumblings, as I say. And unfortunately, a lot of the recent topics, although they've been entertaining, I would say, and certainly have been educational. It's being your friend over the last year or so, I've learned quite a bit about history and current events, politics, and forming opinions, good or bad, about those of us who are in charge. Anyway, a lot of the things going on in the last couple of weeks really have been, put it mildly, less than positive. And we talked last time that it's not really even a reason to work up an itinerary or outline of the next show, because more than likely, over the next week, there will be enough news headlines and goings-on that we'll try to squeeze everything into a 45-minute segment rather than feeling like we have to kill some time to have a full show. And again, here on the 6th of March, that's no exception. You gave me a list, probably, Ron, of about 10 topics we can talk about. I don't want to be on the rest of the day. First of all, I can't be because Scott, the boss man, says at 11 o'clock we hang up our microphones. So we're going to have to be selective about the topic. So I'll start out with the one that I think is the most interesting and one that I have been, I wouldn't say intrigued by, but I would say more like amazed by since the Donald took the Oval Office, and that would be nepotism, or the using of your family members in high-profile positions, possibly even if they aren't as qualified as those not related to you, or there's some other extenuating circumstance, so to speak. And you wrote about that exact topic, Ron, yesterday in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, Nepotism Gone Mad and Undermining the Trump Presidency. Now, Ron, you're, as we discussed before, about a generation older than I am. Both of us seem a little younger than we are, but bottom line is neither is a spring chicken, and you've seen many presidents, as have I, in your lifetime, or even in the entire lifetime of our great country, the U.S. of A. Have we seen any nepotism, anything close to what is exhibited now in the Trump White House? Is this by far the most... Is this a word, nepotistic? I'm not sure if that's a word. Well, the most nepotism, the most nepotism that is the most hiring of relatives, regardless of qualification, or favoring relatives that you've ever seen of any president?
Nothing like what Donald Trump has done. I mean, it's true that President Kennedy had his brother Robert Kennedy as Attorney General, and there was doubts about him because he was only 35 and had never practiced law. But actually, he turned out to be an outstanding Attorney General. Also, Kennedy's brother-in-law, Sergeant Shriver, was the head of the Peace Corps, and he did an excellent job at that, and then went on to become ambassador to France under Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon. And he was also the head of the War on Poverty under Lyndon Johnson. So he was qualified. And further back, as I wrote about last June on my blog, and then I posted it again on Facebook because it's proving true, I was talking about Sergeant Shriver last June and also about William Gibbs McAdoo, the son-in-law of Woodrow Wilson, who was Secretary of the Treasury, and really was, I think overall did a very good job back in the second decade of the 20th century. And I was saying that I didn't think that Jared Kushner would be in any way like William Gibbs McAdoo or Sergeant Shriver or even Robert Kennedy, and it's been proven true, as it looks more than ever that he's going to be facing prosecution very soon, and possibly Ivanka, Trump's daughter, and possibly Donald Jr., his son, could also face it. So this is really a disaster, and there's a movement on, which is crazy, to push Ivanka and Jared out, and yet it seems like Donald doesn't want to do it himself, to just tell them to leave. He's asking John Kelly, the chief of staff, to do this, and I'm thinking, you can't say that to your own daughter and son-in-law, and yet you're going to, somehow you're going to deal with Kim Jong-un or Putin or the Chinese leader or others, if you can't be tough enough with your own family. It really is mind-boggling when you think about it.
So it's not just the using of family members in high-profile positions. I mean, granted, you tend to know these people well. We took a look at Kennedy, and honestly, I wasn't aware that the Attorney General was 35 years old, which isn't necessarily too young if you're qualified, but didn't have any experience practicing, which ironically ended up being an excellent choice, which probably shows excellent insight of John F. Kennedy. I think that's one thing people felt about him during his short presidency. He was young and mysterious in some ways, the first Catholic president, but he was very smart and insightful and made good choices, even if it included members of his own family whose qualifications on paper may not seem to be the greatest. We take a look at the other side of the coin, Donald Trump. We try to give these people a chance, but it's obvious that Jared Kushner should not be in the kind of position that he's in. And
absolutely not.
And maybe some, I don't know, out of lack of a better term, benign nepotism. That's kind of sounds like an oxymoron, but we find ourselves using that in politics and sports a lot of the times. Whereas this very poor nepotism, just some less than prudent choices, are going to haunt the Trump presidency. In fact, they already are. Now, when you were first on the air with us, February of last year, with, of course, the interviewer to the stars, Scott Spears, the main topic was the rather viral blog post you made that Donald Trump wouldn't last past the spring of 2018. The spring of 2018 is almost here, so the clock is ticking, tick, 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 tick. And as you've written in your blog, the Jared Kushner and other nepotism-related matters, and other things we'll talk about today, Mueller investigation, even the thought of Donald Trump that he should never have to be a lame duck, that those things may bring the Trump presidency down. It's obviously been tainted. Certainly it's corrupt. And we'll see exactly where that leads. Would you say, Ron, though, that the nepotism issue, again, this dangerous spiral that seems to be occurring, could that now be the worst thing about the Trump administration and what might very well, in terms of Trump not lasting past the spring of 2018, or are we still thinking that the Mueller investigation, and as well, not to mention the possible Russian hacking, that might be at the top of the list?
I think they're all at the top of the list. I think there's so many different charges that can be brought against Donald Trump and his administration. But I do think if his son-in-law and possibly his son and his daughter or any combination of them were to be indicted, and I think it's going to happen soon, at least for Jared, if not the others, I think that might force him into a situation where he might resign. I still hold to the idea that by May 27th, which is Zachary Taylor's time in office, 16 months and 5 days, at that time, as far as the calendar at that point, a total of 492 days, which is, I think, 82 days from now, I still think that it's very likely that Trump will be out of office by resignation.
So if I were to say, I'm not sure exactly what would be the downfall and likely end of the Trump administration, it's logical to think, well, which is it? Is it Mueller? Would it be the nepotism? Would it be the bad choices for the cabinet, which we'll talk about also this hour? what would be the reason?
I think it's all of them, and I think if indictments follow, more indictments, and it brings up his family, it's going to put him into a very difficult situation as far as staying in office and not trying to somehow save them. But there are those who think he wouldn't care about his own children. We don't really know. He's always thinking about what's best for him, so he might very well not care what happens to his children, even though I would think he would. But he's not a normal person. He is very unhinged, very dangerous. He moves ahead on tariffs and alienates the whole world. And we've learned from the Smoot-Hawley tariff of 1930, it made the depression that had begun much worse. And Hoover signed into law, Herbert Hoover, and it was a big mistake. And tariffs, high tariffs, and declaring or starting trade wars is not a good thing to do. But that's what he's doing right now. And Paul Ryan yesterday spoke out against it. Imagine, Paul Ryan shows some guts and finally speaks up against Trump on something. So I think that his time in office is becoming more and more disastrous by the day and the week.
So bottom line is, as I like to say, sometimes a little bit off the cuff, I've been reading the news, looking at CNN.com, MSNBC.com, FoxNews.com. Again, I want to look at all perspectives. Again, CNN being centrist, slightly left, MSN being moderately left, Fox being moderately right. So I like to see all perspectives. And it's been a busy time for news websites. And for you, Ron, as a history professor, maybe you should write a history book. I think you have enough to fill up 1,000 pages of history from the last year and a half. So maybe something you can do.
One thing I've thought of is if I could somehow get someone to publish a lot of my blog postings on my on the Progressive Professor as a commentary by the Progressive Professor, but I don't know if there really is a market for that, but I certainly think there could be.
Right, but at least we can have fun and talk about stuff, and we don't want to make this show seem too serious as well as too somber, so we'll talk about some lighter or more general interesting tidbits in a bit. I mentioned about, we talked about the nepotism, and again, good choices, bad choices. Kennedy certainly practicing the nepotism, but in a benign way, making some surprising choices that we're still rather amazed to this day. But Trump's choices, less than prudent, to put it mildly. You gave a list on your blog from last Thursday, Ron, March 1st, corrupt and unethical cabinet members of Trump, greater than Ulysses Grant, Warren G. Harding, again, the gentleman president, newspaper man, whom the station is named after,
yes.
Or, of course, one of my favorite presidents, President Richard Nixon. Is that a good imitation, Ron? What do you think?
Not bad.
Okay, well, let me make this perfectly clear. I don't do a great Nixon, but I certainly try. Anyway, little entertainment, tickle the funny bone. I think we need that in today's times. Anyway, you gave a list of about a dozen cabinet members, Ron, whom have come under controversy for ethical violations, lack of scruples, and being arrogant and insensitive. Secretary of the Treasury, I call him Munchkin, like a lot of people do, but I guess it's Steve Mnuchin. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. But Treasury office people are also near and dear to the station, as Mary Ellen Withrow, former Marion Treasurer, Ohio Treasurer, and United States Treasurer under President Bill Clinton for both of his terms, is a Marion area resident. She's on the station often. Again, I've met her. Wonderful lady. Yeah, I know it's a biased opinion, but she's my favorite treasurer or secretary of the treasury of all time. But unfortunately, I can't say that about the current secretary of the treasury. Actually, I'm not even sure who the treasurer is, but again, there are two different offices. They have some overlapping tasks, but they are different. Anyway, off on a tangent again, but I thought I'd give our friend Mary Ellen a well-deserved plug. Steve Munchkin, whatever his name is, the Secretary of the Treasury. What exactly is the issue with him, Ron?
Well, he took trips on public money for vacation, and a lot of these people have done that. But he did that with his new wife, and he spent a lot of public money, and it became a controversy. But they always let it ride, and except for the former Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tom Price, who was forced out over the issue of wasting money, nobody else has been forced out, but a number of them have spent money wildly, including Ryan Zinke, the Secretary of the Interior, Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross, Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson just this past week, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos, and the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, David Shulkin, who actually was also working in that position for Obama in the last year. He's the only Obama holdover that was kept on, but now he's become ethically challenged, as we say. And the Secretary of Homeland Security, the most recent one, Kirstjen Nielsen, and the EPA head, Scott Pruitt, and the White House Chief of Staff, Kelly himself, and the Director of the Office of Management and Budget, and acting head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Mick Mulvaney, who's trying to destroy the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau completely. All these people, and of course Attorney General Jeff Sessions, so many things he has done have been really outrageous. He's a horrible Attorney General, and yet he's being attacked by the boss, by the president, and he's been called now Mr. Magoo, and he somehow just overlooks it all, and he goes to dinner indeed with the Deputy Attorney General, who is indeed allowing the investigation to move forward. So there's a lot of tension there, and the whole government is in chaos and anarchy right now. And according to Trump, he loves it. There's something really seriously wrong with his mental state, no question about it.
So it seems like the list of these corrupted or otherwise faulted, I guess that's the word, cabinet members and staff members almost seems like a who's who. Almost seems like maybe we should talk about who is doing a good job. And we mentioned a few people. We both like Nikki Haley. We understand she does have to bow down to her boss. We don't agree with all of her perspectives, but we certainly don't question her intelligence and her aspirations for higher office. So she's in her 40s. She's good looking. So certainly the tools are there. Right. Now, again, the former governor. I mean, I don't want to discount. I don't want to stress that she is camera friendly. She's a very smart woman, multicultural.
Yes, she is. And the Secretary of Defense, James Mattis, I think, has done a good job. And also the National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster. But now there's rumors he's going to be ushered out soon. There's a lot of people that are talking about are going to be leaving. And himself, the president, jokes on the weekend, this past weekend, about is Stephen Miller, who should leave, actually. He's the person who's the nativist promoting the anti-immigrant policy. Should Stephen Miller leave or Melania? He's bringing up his wife, which indicates there must be tension between him and his wife over all these different accusations of involvement with other women in the past, but after she already had her son, Barron. I mean, the man is totally out of control, and his behavior and everything is just startling. It's never been like this. Even under Richard Nixon, he never acted like this.
I mentioned earlier, I didn't know who the treasurer was. And again, there's a separate position. It's not a cabinet position. It's more of a staff position. But I used to be a big coin collector, Ron. I still do casually, but not as much as I did when I was a kid. So anybody who collects coins and dollar bills and is interested in the signatures on dollar bills, whose mug is on the currency and coins and commemoratives, certainly would agree that the treasurer is an important office. So Jovita Carranza is the current treasurer under Donald Trump, and I wish I could tell you a little more about her, so I had to cheat and go to Wikipedia, which is kind of like, you know, the World Book Encyclopedia at your mouse. She was a deputy administrator for the U.S. Small Business Administration from 06 to 09. She was appointed by President George W. Bush, unanimously confirmed by the U.S. Senate. She was a president and CEO of the JCR Group, which work with corporations and nonprofits on business development and other things. She's on the boards of the United Way National Center for Family Literacy. A little ironic there, working for Trump on the board of family literacy, and I'll leave it at that. American Cancer Society. So, again, although not a cabinet position, looks like Treasurer Jovita Carranza, the 44th treasurer, is a woman of great qualification. She was also Woman of the Year by Hispanic.
No men that have ever had, well, further back, actually, yeah. I'm looking now and I see that up to 1949, we had men always. If we go back before 1949, I see the names of these people, and they seem to all be men. But since 1949, looking all the way back, they're all men. But starting in 1949, they've all been women, which is an interesting thing I did not know before.
And I know Scott and Mary Ellen talk about this, but in the last 70 years or so, the Secretary of the Treasury has always been a guy, and the Treasurer has always been a female. I'm not sure if that's...
You see that now, yeah.
Kind of like one of those unwritten rules, but it is interesting to be sure. But Treasurer Carranza was Woman of the Year by Hispanic Business Magazine, Woman of Distinction by American Association of University Women, and honorary alumna for Alverno College. She's a Chicagoan, first-generation Mexican-American.
Yeah, may I point out that the last four treasuries have all been Hispanic women, which is interesting. And if you go back further, in 1977 to 81, under Carter, we had an African-American treasurer, which is very interesting that we've had diversity in that position, along with being women. That is very interesting. And even go further back, there's Hispanic women under Nixon as well, it turns out. So it's been much more diversity than we would see elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting position. Again, biased opinion because of my background as a coin and currency collector. Our friend of the station, I call her an acquaintance, Marilyn Withrow, and then she's been on again with Scott many, many times. You can go to the show archives and listen. And those kind of things are intriguing. The background of cabinet members and staff members, what they do, the influence that they had. Mary Ellen oversaw a lot of the security upgrades that were done to currency during the Clinton administration. So it's a position of quite a bit of importance. And again, the John Hancock, or in this case, the Jane Hancock, is prominently featured on the left of all of your U.S. currency. So interesting about the cabinet positions. And again, we like to not just talk about some negative things, but some trivia, some lighter topics. And of course, any show with Adam, there will always be a wisecracker too. Never take myself
I wanted to point out that
too seriously.
Now here that you're a coin collector, I've always been very big on coins with the U.S. Mint. I've collected from U.S. Mint, and also presidential coins outside the U.S. Mint, going a long way back. So you and I have that common hobby. I wasn't aware of it.
Yeah, being a numismatist, or maybe it's numismatist.
I think I've heard both.
And a philatelist, a stamp collector. First day covers. I have a whole collection of all that good stuff. So
yes.
Yeah, it's a good, I know a lot of geeky people are kind of into the hobby, and it's, I guess, another thing else we could talk about, Ron, because people don't, it used to be, again, grocery stores, for example, didn't think about taking credit cards even 30, 40 years ago. Now, pretty much everybody uses a card, and I think a lot of the Apple stores, they don't even take cash. You have to pay with a card or Apple Pay or one of those kind of methods. So people aren't using currency and coins as much. They certainly are still being used. And collecting older bills and older coins is interesting. And if you're like me, someone who doesn't have a natural interest in history, but again, being friends with you, Ron, that's changed quite a bit. You learn a lot about the United States being a collector, and I'm glad that I took up that hobby and I'm still interested in it, but I wouldn't say as active as I was back in my younger years. I guess,
well,
ironically,
you're,
Ron,
you're much busier than you were in your younger years.
Yeah, here in Ohio, all the casinos we have, of course, you have to use cash when you play the slots. So maybe in some ways, dollar bills are making a bit of a comeback. And, as I say, just like with records coming back, sometimes the more things change, the more they stay the same. That's how things are. Life can be a bit cyclical. What interesting cabinet member of President Trump's, Ron, is someone who had presidential aspirations himself, and it very interesting, because you'd think this man would be a super intellectual, being a surgeon, a man with a lot of education. Of course, that would be
Dr. Ben Carson,
Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. It just seems like he does
just
because you're a doctor doesn't mean you're not going to do things that are goofy or are questionable. We have had many of our presidents do things that were kind of goofy. I mean, George W. Bush, for example, a very good businessman, the MBA. He's not a dumb person by any stretch of the imagination, but he was known for saying things that probably didn't reflect his intelligence in the best way possible. Is that the same issue with Carson? Carson, again, is a surgeon, Ron. He's obviously a very, very smart man. But why does it seem like he's always doing these things that seems like they're such bad decisions, and we question his ethics all the time? Wouldn't you think that a doctor or a surgeon in a cabinet position would be such a good choice?
Well, yes, except that he's put into housing and urban development, which honestly he has no knowledge of, except that he lives in public housing in Detroit as a kid. You know, he was in poverty, unfortunately for him. But really, he has no background or qualifications to do that at all. And I have spoken to people who knew him, and when he worked at Johns Hopkins, and said that he's not his best anymore. That according to them, and it's not official, that he has mentally deteriorated. That's why he left surgery, and it could be. That's true, that he had his best period and then he finally left on a, you know, because he was just not able to do the job anymore. That's what I've heard. But again, it may not be all fact. I can't be sure. So I'm just claiming it's rumor. But I've heard a lot of negative things about him in his behavior with people in the last 10 or so years. So he left and, you know, and he decided to run for president. And I thought he had no real qualifications other than he was a brain surgeon, you know, pediatric brain surgeon. But I didn't see that as qualifications to run for the presidency, and he made an embarrassment of himself, I think, in the campaign.
Right. So, jokes about brain surgery aside, ironically, maybe that is the case in some instances. Yeah, I didn't think that Carson was that old. He doesn't look that old. He's 66, born in 1951.
Yes.
And, again, mental deterioration affects people at different ages. And yeah, I wasn't quite aware of what the deal was. But again, I said jokes about brain surgery aside, he's highly educated and smart. But sometimes things...
Yes, he was. I don't think he necessarily is, but he was. It's actually sad because I do think he's definitely... Something is not quite right there.
Right. And you would think a black gentleman who rose from poverty to become a pediatric brain surgeon would be an American hero. And that's what's kind of sad. I hate to say anything bad about the guy because I admire
him. Say he was. He isn't now. I would say he was. I'm not going to take away his earlier accomplishments. I wouldn't go that far. But
right.
I think his prime period is past, which is sad. It's very sad, and it's alarming for anybody as you get older to think, could oneself be that way one day? And you certainly hope not. But certainly that can happen. You're right.
Yeah, but you'd agree, Ron. I mean, we concur that he probably isn't the best choice to be in a high cabinet position or be president. But it's just hard to... It's painful to say anything bad about a black gentleman who became a pediatric brain surgeon after a childhood in poverty. It's sad, but sometimes reality is painful.
Yes, it is. It's a sad world that some people have their moment and then suddenly they're not the same person. And that's what I think is his case. Because even the way he speaks and behaves in public is an indication to me that something is not quite normal. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, so somebody might say, who am I to speak? But my feeling is that he never came across as quite always there, as you'd say, in what he said in public.
Let's go ahead and switch topics here. Never a difficult thing to do with Professor Feynman on the line with us, a person who can always answer my questions, and we can giggle at some of the same stuff, even if it's serious and important discussion material. Adam Lepp here with a fine or a mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. As we all know, January 20th is the day that we have a presidential inauguration. See, I said that all in one breath, kind of hard to enunciate, but I have been practicing, obviously. But I do remember, again, I don't remember in person because I wasn't alive yet. In fact, my parents weren't even alive, but my grandparents, may they rest in peace, they were alive from 1789 until 1933. Ron wasn't alive yet either, in case you're wondering.
No, I was. I'm not that old.
March 4th, which was, I think, last Sunday, was the inauguration, and the 20th Amendment changed it to January 20th, effective 1937. In your blog from March 3rd, last Saturday, Ron, you wrote about some famous inauguration happenings. We've talked about the president who is considered one of our worst presidents, although he might now be considered our second worst president, our only bachelor, James Buchanan. Back in 1857, he was so sick that he considered bypassing a public ceremony of inauguration, but went through the motions, and then was in bed recovering for 2 weeks before being able to lead the nation. On March 4th of 1865, one of the most famous inaugurations, Abraham Lincoln, the second time, giving of the most famous inauguration address, with malice toward none, with charity for all, Lincoln, of course, did not know that his future assassin, John Wilkes Booth, was in the inauguration crowd and moving toward the inauguration stand as Lincoln spoke. Another president who I find intriguing, the only one with a PhD, Woodrow Wilson, in 1913, the first Democratic president in a generation, only the second since the Civil War. Any of the other ones that kind of stand out, Ron? I'm just skimming over the blog that you wrote, but...
Yeah, well, 1933, the last time, was the first inaugural of FDR, and is, let me assert my firm belief, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and that's considered, along with Lincoln's second inaugural and John F. Kennedy, which was a different day, his only inaugural, as the three best inauguration speeches.
Where would Donald Trump's inauguration speech stand?
It's been panned, because it's January 20th, it's been panned by most observers as very dark and negative, and that's not usually what a president does on Inauguration Day. Usually they have an optimistic view of the future. Even in bad times like the Civil War and the Great Depression, Lincoln and FDR did not speak so darkly and negatively as Trump did on January 20th, 2017. I want to point out, though, about Buchanan, that in my research for my book, Assassination Threats to the American Presidency, I came across this information about Buchanan being very sick, having some kind of a, I guess today we'd call it a virus, we don't know what it was, and the thought being that he might have been poisoned at the hotel that he was staying at because of lack of sanitation, and that may have been what happened. But some people even wonder if there wasn't a plot by some people to try to kill him, although we have no proof of that, so I didn't do a chapter on that, because the vice president was the Southerner, John C. Breckinridge, only 36 years old, of Kentucky, and the thought was this could have been a Confederate plot a few years before the Civil War to try to get rid of Buchanan from Pennsylvania, the only president from Pennsylvania, and make Breckinridge at 30, actually it would have been 37 by Inauguration Day, but elected at 36, make him the president. But it's just something we don't know. But of course, sanitation was not the best in D.C., so a lot of people got sick, and many did die over time from food, from food infections.
So Buchanan, although interestingly considered possibly our worst president, and even if you don't agree with that, certainly he's in the bottom 10, the only bachelor president, and his VP was barely old enough to hold the office at 36.
That's correct. So yeah.
A lot of unique things about that administration, and it's just interesting to ponder that, that there are unique qualities in every presidency. I mean, Donald Trump, again, I would be 70 years old before I finish talking about all the unique qualities of his presidency, but we know some of the main ones. Again, no prior military or elected political office experience. First host of a reality show, not the first president in show business. Obviously, Reagan was a well-respected actor, but Donald Trump, unique with a capital U, and we'll leave it at that. Now, Andrew Jackson, Ron, on March 4th of 1829, he was the firstborn as not part of the aristocracy, and I assume you mean he was the firstborn after the United States became an independent country. He was seen as representing the common man. Do you see that as significant? I think we talked about, I think it was Clinton, but I might be wrong, the first baby boomer president. So sometimes there's a milestone, and we talk about the first president to be part of that milestone.
Well, certainly Jackson was born to poverty, but he was wealthy and a slave owner and a plantation owner by the time he became president. But he was the first one not coming from the aristocracy. The first six presidents, the two Adamses, Washington, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, all came from the Virginia aristocracy for the four of them, and the two Adamses from the Massachusetts aristocracy. So he did appeal to the common white man, and they're the only ones who could vote. By that time, we did have popular vote, and indeed, the ordinary white man who was a citizen and over 21 could vote, and they voted him in over who they thought of as King John II, as he termed John Quincy Adams to be. So, I think it is an important turning point in the sense of popular participation and the idea that he spoke for the common man, although it's only the white man.
So it seems like every inauguration there is something we can talk about. And yeah, Trump, who always seems energetic, sometimes when he is left to provide his viewpoint on something, comes across as negative and dark. And I noticed that also during the inauguration. Okay, he's different from Obama. He doesn't like a lot of what Obama stood for and the policies, Obamacare obviously being the major one there. But at least let's try to be positive. We're all Americans. We should all be on the same side. And just providing that air of negativity isn't something we really advise. But again, we shall see what happens. Inauguration is always a new beginning, whether it's a good one or a bad one. About 5-6 minutes left of the show, Ron. Of course, as usual, time flies. Nothing different there. Something else which came up over the last few days, as I mentioned, would be term limits or being a lame duck president. And Franklin Roosevelt served, I think, about 13 years total. And after that, with Truman, the president became limited to 2 terms. That is the second.
Well, let me correct that. Actually, FDR served 12 years and only 39 days of his fourth term, because his first term began on March 4th, and every other term began on January 20th. So even if he had served the whole 4 terms, he would have only served like 50, it would have been 15 years and about 10 and a half months, I guess, because of 6 weeks would have been taken away because right. The later inaugurations were in January. And Truman served all but 3 months of the term of FDR, then had his own term. But he was not limited by the 22nd, since it was passed, the 22nd Amendment, since it was passed during his term. He could have run in 1952, thought of it, and decided not to. So he could have also served more than 8 years, but chose not to. But starting with Eisenhower, after the 22nd Amendment was ratified, from that point on, presidents could only have 8 years by election or up to 10 years if they succeeded in the last half of a term.
So FDR, again, a little more, you know, there's so many ironies with presidents, Ron. FDR obviously was very controversial due to his policies, but I would say most people like him, and you certainly, as someone of the Democratic persuasion, would, I'm sure, be a very big fan of his. And again, I'm independent, but I still think he is and remains and will be permanently an American hero with the guts to bring forth controversial, very changing policies to make sure the country that he loves so dearly and his family loves so dearly could thrive during times good and bad. And he was the last president and the only president, unless they change the law again, to serve more than 8 years or two.
Well, it's an amendment, so it's not going to be changed. And although, of course, we just learned 2 days ago, and I haven't had a chance to write on it yet, that Trump has proposed the idea that he likes the Chinese president having a lifetime term, and that he thinks that's a good idea, implying he would like right. to be president for the rest of his life. Well, and that's shocking, and it's against the Constitution, and it's alarming. And it's the newest controversy after his controversy of last week, saying he would have gone into Parkland, the Parkland High School, without any weapon. That is absolutely insane. Right. Well, this is very alarming, this whole idea of having a lifetime presidency. And I think that's what he would like to accomplish if he could.
Well, get back to that, Ron. Well, I don't want to correct you, and I'm probably wrong because you're always right about this stuff. But can't we kind of undo an amendment? Isn't that how prohibition worked? They made alcohol legal, then they undid that and made it legal again. So, I mean, I know it's not going to happen, but could conceivably undo that amendment, right?
But it does require a 2/3 vote of both houses, and today 3/4 is 38 state legislatures. With prohibition, there was a movement on for years to get rid of it. I don't really think, although there's talk about getting rid of the income tax amendment or the direct election of senators amendment or the women's suffrage amendment, or even what we've been talking about, the 22nd Amendment, I really don't think there ever would be support for 2/3 of each house of Congress and 38 state legislatures by majority vote in both houses to do that. Theoretically, it could, but right. unlikely.
So theoretically, yes, but practically, not too likely. You probably remember, Ron, as Obama was ending his presidency, there was a lot of talk that people wanted him for a third term and that maybe find a way to kind of squeeze it in. Of course, you can't just do that by making a proclamation, but people thought it might have been a good idea. Now, you would agree, Ron.
That the Republican right. Party has not reacted to Trump's statement about wishing he could be there for life. But if Obama did, they'd be ready to lynch him if
right.
he was
now,
to suggest
you,
that.
You personally, Ron, do you agree with the 2-term limit? Should we change it, maybe have 1 term or have 3? Or is it just about right where it is now?
I think it's fine as it is. I think we should have a right to reelect, but I don't think we should have more than 8 years. And we should have the ability to, of course, kick someone out after 4 years. No, I think that the idea of limiting for that was good, just as I would think limiting congressional tenure would be good, but that could never happen because the Congress would have to vote to limit its own time in office, and that's why it will never happen for Congress, but I think it should. But the presidency, I think it is a smart idea, yes.
Let me ask you one more factual question. Instead of checking Wikipedia, I'd rather ask a human, as no smartphone and no computer can replace a smart person. And, you know, Ron, with his PhD and his books
smart,
and
right?
all of his teaching and all that stuff, he pretty much knows it. You don't need to have a World Book Encyclopedia, just call up Ron. You mentioned about the 10 years for a VP succeeding a president. So let's just pretend that it is January 21st of 2019. That would be one day less than 2 years left of Donald Trump's presidency. Donald Trump resigns or is impeached. Mike Pence becomes president. Does that mean that Mike Pence could actually run on his own twice and be a president for a total of 10 years minus one day? Is that what you're saying about that 10-year rule?
Well, if he came in on January 20th, 2019, after 12 noon, that's the time of inauguration, the rest of January 20th. If he came in after 12 noon, January 20th, 2019, it would mean less than 2 years, and he could have 10 years in office. If he comes in the next, 10 months, or whatever it is to January, he could only have one term. The same thing with Gerald Ford. He came in with 2 years and 5 months of Nixon's term. He was only eligible for one term, therefore. If Nixon had left in 1975 after January 20th, then Ford could have been elected twice.
Yeah, that's just an interesting question as we get ready to close out the show. My interest in math and statistics and yours in presidency, that's an interesting combination, but that is possible. And I was just thinking, okay, did Ford come in at the halfway? I know it was right by the halfway point. But it was right before the halfway point. Therefore, although Ford did not win the election against Carter, if he would have, he would not have been able to have run again because that would have given him the presidency for just over 10 years.
No, only one term plus 2 years, 5 months, because he came in the first half of the term of Nixon. Correct.
And you'd personally agree that is that a good law as it is? I actually wasn't totally aware exactly how that worked. And I always learn something doing this show. Is that about right, do you think? Or should a VP who becomes president be allowed to be elected on his own twice, regardless of the amount of time he spent as the successor to
the president?
Well,
that's the 22nd Amendment. It says it in there that if you have less than 2 years of the term, you can be elected twice. That's what the Congress chose to do in 1947, sent it to the states, and it was ratified. I want to point out Lyndon Johnson's the only other case that came up about that. He came in with 1 year and 2 months left of Kennedy's term, was elected, and was trying for another term, which would have been 1969 to 73, then dropped out because of opposition, and he decided to withdraw. But he was originally running, so he could have had, in theory, 9 years and 2 months, would have been the only other president to have more than 8 years other than FDR's 12 years and 39 days.
I'd like to tickle a few brain cells. And, Ron, I think we've tickled some of mine and some of yours, and that's part of the fun of doing this show.
Yes.
But interestingly, since we both agree that Trump is not going to finish his term, whether that conclusion is this spring, like you prognosticated, or might be sometime, let's say, next year. We certainly see a scenario where Pence could end up serving the second longest term of any president since FDR. That would require succeeding to the presidency and keeping that office until the end of Trump's first term and then being elected twice on his own. I don't see that happening, but it is possible.
Oh, I don't think there's a chance in the world that he'll be challenged by other Republicans if he became president, just like Ford was challenged by Reagan, although he did win the nomination, but it weakened him in 76. I don't think it's a chance in the world, and I'm still saying, from my viewpoint as an outsider, I look to John Kasich as probably the best person out there, or maybe Ben Sasse of Nebraska, who's young, but has also been a major Trump critic. I think they're the two best people, and they're conservatives, but they're not crazy, and I do think they are the best people right now to consider, if I had any input, which I don't.
So I'll leave the usual comment of we shall see, but these things are possibilities. Whether they will occur is a different matter, and I don't think they will, but you never know. You never, just when you think you figured it out, a curve is thrown. We have less than a minute left, Ron. What are your thoughts about Trump saying that, like with China, he should be able to serve for life or serve for a longer term than 8 years? What kind of went through your brain when you heard that?
I was just about as angry as I was last week about his comment about going into the school, without any weapons to save the kids, which is insane. This man is an authoritarian. He sounds more and more like a fascist every day. I don't see him as any different than a Mussolini or even a Putin type, or even the Turkish leader or the Egyptian leader or the Filipino leader. And it's alarming. And the fact that Congress, the Republicans, are saying nothing about it, although they're upset about his tariff thing, but they're not upset about that. It's just astounding. And I think it could destroy the Republican Party because they're going to allow him to destroy the Constitution or move in that direction and try to declare martial law and suspend the Constitution, which is what he's implying. This is alarming. This is not something we can just sit back and say, oh, well, he's just talking. His language is terrifying, I think, and very worrisome.
So as we talked earlier, leaving the law as it is, you can serve two elected terms as president if you become president, because as vice president, because the president left office due to one of multiple reasons. As long as the term you finish out is less than 2 years, you can be elected twice on your own. Leave the law as it is. And I would tend to agree. I have no problem with reelecting a popular president, but I think enough is enough. And it's good to have change. And I think the way Trump's...
We need turnover. I don't think anybody is that important that they're the only one who can run the government.
And the way Trump said it was rather arrogant. And we'll leave it at that.
It arrogant? That's mild.
But thank you again, Dr. Ron Fineman, for being on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. A lively, fun discussion.
Thank you so much again for inviting me.
We both learned a few things, and we will
speak again. Had a good time, yes.
Have a great rest of your day. Adam Lepp here. Thank you for listening to The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.